The following program contains the opinions of the host, guests, and call-in participants. These do not necessarily represent the views of this show's distributors or sponsors. This program may contain obscene, profane, or otherwise objectionable language. Viewer discretion is advised. Yes, hello, coming to you cordless, everybody. It's 11:03 on the East Coast of the United States, 8:03 on the West Coast, 10:03 where I'm sitting here in Minneapolis, and we started a minute late, big deal. Yeah, do you care? No, I don't. Hold on just a second. We're having a green screen problem here. Hold on. There we go. I'm Jim Peters. Welcome to Jim Peters Tonight. It's Thursday. It's September 28th. We got a Bigfoot night tonight. Here's what we got. We got Larry Newman, Bigfoot investigator, Mary Ann Zibel. She's the host. I got to read this. You know, I'm so organized. She is the founder and coordinator of the Ozark Mountain Bigfoot Conference in Branson, Missouri. There, I got it. And Daniel Perez is on. He's the editor of the Bigfoot Times. I'd like to say it's an online newspaper. It's not. It's a hard copy newspaper, and he distributes it as a newsletter, and he mails it to you. And I signed up today. He already checked in, so I know he's coming back on. I love this idea. I know why. Do you get enough email? Yeah, I do. I get enough email, and I try to unsubscribe from like freaking everything. Doesn't matter. I still get too much email. I barely look at most of the, you know, I'm signed up for newsletters and stuff. Every once in a while, I'll look at one. I'd rather watch Let's Make a Deal at 2 p.m. Central here on CBS. That's what I'd rather do. So I was talking to a friend of mine today. You know, he's my age. I'm going to be 68 in 2 weeks. And he's still working. He has a very, very high-powered job. He works for a large holding company in Washington, D.C., And he's talking about the fact, you know, he's kind of every other day he thinks about quitting work. And yeah, I understand. I'm getting lazy. I mean, I know I've talked about this before. I'm really getting lazy. I was the guy who was always like doing it. There's a 3-year period in the 1990s where I only slept 3 hours a day. I mean, I was up working all the time and I enjoyed it. I liked it. It gave me a high. After 3 years of that, I realized I couldn't think worth shit. I don't know how the hell that occurred to me. I don't know. I can't remember what happened. But any rate, yeah. So yeah, I'm lazy. I'm sitting here. So I like Perez's idea. So he's been doing this now for 30, 35 years, I think. He's been sending this newsletter out. He does a newsletter on Bigfoot News. I think it's quarterly, I think, or every other month or something like that. But yeah, it's a hard copy newsletter. He actually sends it through the mail. He still does it. They have a website. Oh, the only thing you do on their website is subscribe. That's it. It basically describes what it is. It's a one-page website. You know, he's not putting that stuff online. I don't blame him. I really don't. You know, shit. Okay, so I want to thank Don Zorro and Jeff Meyer for joining me last night for the debate thing. Everyone seems to agree. The debate was just a snooze. I mean, you know, and we thought so too. I mean, that was the thinking our end. The only thing I've read of any consequence that happened today is that polling indicates, and this is kind of fascinating, and Lee Carter, one of the pollsters who did the poll, thought, she said this was shocking, and that is apparently Nikki Haley talking about her distrust of China sent the Democrats, I mean, she got a high approval rating from Democrats. Now, you have to understand when these real-time approvals on these polls, they ask everybody to grade stuff from A to F, you know, just standard, like, school grading system. And usually, with C being the average, usually a Democrat for the Republican poll will never grade anything above a D, generally. Not only did quite a few of the participants get C's, get C's, but Nikki Haley actually got a B from the Democrats. And Carter said, in terms of the historical, perceptions in these polls that they measure, this is shocking. And I kind of agree. I think that's kind of interesting. So, otherwise, yeah, it was a snooze, you know. Jeff Meyer had one interesting comment last night. You know, I've been saying for quite a while that I think that someone's paying Chris Christie to run for president. I think that's what I said is that some Democrat organization somewhere is paying him to run for president and bash Trump, because that's basically been his only function this entire time. He's polling almost zero, and, you know, so why is he in it? I mean, he must know. He's not that stupid. So I said, I think he's getting paid. But Jeff had a better idea. Jeff says he thinks he's getting paid by Republicans, and that may be true. You know, there's a lot of old-style rhino Republicans. They don't want to see the gravy train is going, you know. Biden's going to get caught, you know. It's like, and now the interesting thing about this latest indictment of Trump, or actually I think it's a civil suit. No, maybe it's not. Maybe it isn't. Maybe it's actually criminal. About the fact that so they busted Trump now for lying on bank forms about his net worth and the worth of particular assets, and what none of the media mentions on this, and also is not mentioned in the indictment either, is that nobody lost any money. He's not actually being accused or defrauding anybody of money. He's accused of lying on forms. Because the forms were for loans, but he paid all the loans back on time and in perfect order. The loans got paid. He didn't jip anybody out of money. And so, okay, it's like a lot of people do that. You know, if you know you can pay the loan back, you're a lot of people lie to get the loan, you know. Now, yeah, that may not be right. That may be illegal. But still, in retrospect, if you pay the loan off, does anybody care? No. The bank certainly doesn't care. But apparently the government cares here because it's Donald Trump. That's why. The other thing that happened last night is, of course, Trump wasn't there. And, I mean, Newt Gingrich got on Fox News today, and he's talking about the fact that they should just skip these debates. He said everyone has to come to terms with the fact that Trump is going to be the nominee. And I think that's probably true. I think he's, 42 points ahead of DeSantis, the next person. And DeSantis came off, people polled this morning said DeSantis won the debate. Why? Because he was less of a jackass than everybody else. And two people, and I'm going to quote Dana Loesch on this because she's a woman, she can get away with it, described Nikki Haley as bitchy. And she said, and Loesch said, yeah, I know that's a sexist term, but it's the only term I can actually use, that she was bitchy, came off as bitchy. All I heard is a bunch of people trying to talk over each other. You know, it was basically a clown show. It was, you know. Anyway, Gingrich is saying people should just come to terms with the fact, yeah, it's going to be Trump, you know. I think there's more of a chance it's going to be Trump. I'm not still positive it's going to be Biden. I don't. I'm not. I mean, right now, I'd say, odds on favorite. Mark Tapscott, who was on the show a couple of weeks ago, you know, who actually covers Congress, he says if he was a betting person, he'd bet against Biden. He does not think Biden's going to be the nominee. And a lot of people say they will pull him at the last minute. But the thing is, I think he's such a stubborn old fart that I think he will refuse to go. The guy's got a huge ego. And, you know, most of these politicians do. I mean, come on, let's fess up. You know, he was talking to my friend of mine about this thing about Trump lying on these forums. Why is Trump lying about his assets? It's an ego thing, you know. He just wants to say he's one of the richest guys on the planet, you know. That's it. Yeah. But once again, he didn't screw anybody out of any money. And nobody in the press mentions this. Nobody. It's just mind-boggling. Oh, well. The one thing that everyone, the only thing that there was serious disagreement on last night at that debate is how to handle Ukraine. Yes, there were two very, I mean, and I was, I think it was, there were seven people on stage, but it was about split roughly 50-50 about whether we should keep giving money to Ukraine or get out of there. And yeah, people feel quite strongly about this. And this is my thing. I never know what to think. I don't talk about Ukraine on the show because I simply don't know what to think. I have no... On the one hand, we get to fight one of our enemies, the Russia, by proxy. And I think that works out great. We haven't lost a single person in this fight so far. Not a single soldier has been killed. On the other hand, you know, we're still giving money and a shitload of money to what is still one of the most corrupt governments on earth. And no one ever talks about that. I mean, even if you're going to buy the fact, you know, that Zelensky is a savior, the rest of that government is still corrupt to the hilt. It's ridiculous. And so, and how much money, Nikki Haley, I think, made that point last night. It's like, no, it wasn't her, because she is for sending money to Ukraine, if I'm right. Ramaswamy is not. He said we should just get out, you know. But, yeah, we're sending hundreds of billions of dollars. And still, does it bother you? God almighty. We are throwing around these numbers like it's popcorn, like there's nothing. $1 billion is still a shitload of money. It's $1,000 million. That's what it is. Now, do you have $1 million? I'm guessing of the people listening to this show, only 1% do. So, because that's pretty much the average, you know. Well, you know, there's less than 1% of the... No, actually, no, that's not true. From what I understand, I think 5% of the American... I'm pulling this now out of statistics I read years ago, but 5% of the American public has assets of over $1 million. That's assets, not income. But if you want income, yeah, it's 0.1% of the public has income over $1 million, annual income. That's one out of every 1,000 people. So, yeah, and so you take, you know, $1 billion is 1,000 times that. So, yeah, now they're talking about 30, 50 billion, 300 billion. When you're talking about 500 billion, that's half a trillion. You know, oh, God, it's like, Jesus. And it's like, it's nothing. You know, it's like, well, you know, we can raise more money. Well, you're not raising it. You're borrowing it. And the interest on the debt is now going up. You know, they're talking about, you know, most people think that before the end of the year, the Fed is going to add 50 more basis points or 0.5% to the interest rate. Oh, well. Also, there's one more thing I want to talk about last night, too. And this is really interesting. So Fox News, now it's not just Fox News. They're all over the television. If you turn on network TV or cable TV, you'll see ads regularly now for TikTok. This is the thing that TikTok does good, right? Okay, fuck you. It does not. TikTok is a way for China to get my personal information. That's what it is. That's the whole point here, folks. Don't fool yourselves. In the process, they have hypnotized our youth, and everyone thinks they're having a really good time watching these 20-second videos of people unload their refrigerators. It's bullshit. For my previous job, my boss asked me to get on TikTok to see if we wanted to have a presence on there, the company I was working for. And I did get on TikTok. And first of all, this is really interesting. You can access TikTok on the web, but to actually sign up for an account, you have to do it on the app. You have to download the app to your phone. Why? Because once you download the app to your phone, even if you delete the app, it's still fucking collecting information. They still know how to do this. You know, you don't really delete the app. You delete the visual parts of it. You can't use it anymore. But there's still shit there sending your information back to China. It's like, wow, that's great. That's great. I had to do the same damn thing. I had to download the app to set up an account. And then I got on, I looked, and I was appalled by what I saw. I was just appalled. It was just unbelievable. This is entertainment. This is what we've come to. But the real amazing thing is, Breitbart pointed out that Fox News aired multiple ads during that debate while the moderators were questioning Vivek Ramaswamy for using TikTok. Can't make that shit up, folks. You can't. Oh, man. We need to get off TikTok. Take it off your kids' phones. It's a travesty. It's a direct line to the Chinese sewer. That's what it is. All right, so Larry Newman's here. We're going to run the pretty little bumper music, and then we're going to talk to him. Here we go. Ladies and gems, Bigfoot investigator extraordinaire Larry Newman on the right side of your screen. Hi, Larry.
Hi, Jim. How
man,
you doing?
you're still handsome, man. You're a beautiful man. You know, I don't know how you keep the woman away. I just don't.
I need to get that in writing so I can show some people.
So I want to thank you, even though I kind of like ruined your social life here. Let me explain to the folks what I did. Larry sent me the email with a couple of people's names on it. I thought, oh, you arranged to have these people show up. So I sent them an email on how to connect. And then and Daniel Perez writes me back and says, what the fuck is this about? Okay.
Daniel's a good guy.
Yeah. But he already checked in. So I know he's coming on. I haven't heard.
Great.
You know, so we have a little crowd here. We have a little talk. So. Now, I want to point out, too, you are a bail bondsman by profession, right?
Correct.
And we're going to have you on at another time to talk about the whole bail bonds issue in the United States, because this is, at this point, this is beyond BS, isn't it?
Well, crime has just gone completely
berserk. It's nuts.
The left has created a situation where they want no one held accountable.
Yeah.
And... That's where the bail bondsman comes in, is we hold people accountable, make sure they show up to court and stand up to court and the victims get closure.
Yeah, but we're not going to talk about that tonight. Tonight we're going to talk about Bigfoot. So
yeah.
So before the other people join us here, why don't you tell us briefly how you got involved in all this?
Well, I was in law enforcement for a long time, and I was a detective, and I went through and got certified as a crime scene investigator. And after I left law enforcement, started my bail bond business. I had back in 1970, I'd picked up one of the Reader's Digest books in my mom's beauty shop, and I read this story about some guys taking this video of this creature back in California.
What year was this again?
Probably 1970.
Okay.
Okay, I was just a kid.
Are you talking about the Patterson-Gimlin film?
Patterson-Gimlin film. And I thought, man, that's a really interesting, you know. And I was an outdoor kid. I hunted, fished, trapped, and spent lots of time outdoors, you know, in the country and things. So we rock along to, you know, the mid-2000s, and the world of the internet opened up. And I'm cruising along, and I come across Bigfoot in the Patterson-Gimlin film again. And so that kind of got me interested. I got to researching a little bit, and I found out there's this organization called the BFRO, Bigfoot Field Research Organization, and they were going to have a little expedition in Missouri. So I thought, hey, that'd be cool. So 2009, I signed up, and in the fall of 2009, I went on this expedition. Met a lot of people from all across the country and a lot of Bigfoot researchers and learned a lot about Sasquatch and they found out I was a former detective and crime scene investigator, and so they asked me if I would join BFRO as an investigator for Southwest Missouri, and I agreed. And you know, I love talking to people, and that was my job as an investigator. I was always out interviewing people and doing my interview and interrogation, and so you know, hey, this is great. Yeah, I'll go talk to people. Well, it didn't take very long. Talking to these people that had encounters, and of course my job as an investigator is to determine if these people are truthful or if they're lying to you, and so to determine whether they actually had what they say they did.
Hey, I'm going to stop you for a second, Larry.
Okay.
I'm going to want to cut to the chase here because I've never asked you this before. What percentage of the people or incidents have you investigated where you determined they were hoaxes?
Oh, probably 15 to 20%.
Really? Hoaxes. That high, huh?
Yeah. You know, in back 10 or 15 years ago, you know, they thought it was fun to write up a report, send it in, you know, make it up and things like that. And of course, when I get the report and I pick up the phone and call them and I talk to them on the phone a little bit, and I pretty quickly determine those that are being hoaxed and from those that are trying to be truthful. And then after that, I go out and actually go to them, meet with them, the ones that I feel like are being truthful, and follow up with them and their story, and then I'm out following up after that without them out in the locations where they had the encounter, and trying to gather the physical evidence that goes along with their story.
That actually surprises me that that many people try to do this bullshit.
Yeah. Well, it kind of thinned out. You don't get that many anymore. And when you read the reports, a lot of times you can see that in the reports. But you know, I went through training as a written statement analysis, and you know, after reading and writing up a lot of reports and talking to a lot of people through law enforcement, it doesn't take very long before you can begin to tell real quick, even over the phone.
Needless to say, your former job suits you perfectly for this. I mean, that's pretty cool, actually.
Yeah.
All right, so is the number, you said the number of hoaxes is going down. Is it that the actual number of people that are sending in hoaxes is decreasing, or is the number of people making legitimate Bigfoot sightings increasing, and therefore the percentage is getting smaller? Do you know what I mean?
I think the percentage is getting smaller. The percentage of hoaxes are getting smaller because people are finding out that we don't have any patience for hoaxers. You get labeled as a hoaxer and you're done. You know, nobody's going to talk to you about this.
Yeah, interesting. Okay, so then you've been doing this for what now, about 10 years?
About 12, 13 years, yeah.
Yeah, so now, before the others join us, I will ask, and I know the answers to some of these questions, you and I talk about this a lot, but, you know, a lot of people watching this don't know.
Mary Ann joined.
So, what have you seen Bigfoot?
Yes.
And how did you see Bigfoot?
I went with an investigator from Texas who is a former fire investigator, fire marshal investigator for the state of Texas. We went to a remote location. We looked at the map. We picked a spot on the map. Not been down there before. Nobody knew where we were going. There was no way anybody would know where we were going. On our first trip, we didn't really know what we were going to run into. And we pulled up along a river in south central Missouri in the Ozarks. And we got out. It was about 9:30 at night. This fire investigator who had worked for years with the FLIR technology, the thermal camera technology, he began scouring the area with his thermal scope, and almost immediately identified one individual across the river from us, kind of behind a gravel bar that was weaving back and forth. He would turn and walk to the left and then walk back to the right. And we're talking, you know, late October. We're talking it's probably 45 degrees out, 9:30 at night. We're remote. We're probably 3 miles from the closest residence in that area. And we were getting a body thermal image, full body thermal, not like someone who would be wearing clothes.
And what time did you say at night this was?
This is about 9:30 at night.
Yeah. No one's going to be out in the woods walking around.
2-3 hours.
Right. Right.
Right. And we don't take just that, but in just a few minutes, he identified a second individual that was on the bluff up above the creek, on the other side of the creek, full body, walk out from the woods, would stand there. You could see the arms in the thermal video. You could, he would turn around and walk back into the woods and then come back out and stand at the edge of the bluff again. So we've got about an hour and 15 minutes of video of these, at least two individuals. In reviewing the video, we've located a third individual crouched down, leaning out from a tree, not very far from the one that's up on the bluff. And when you review the video, you look at it, every once in a while, behind this one that's crouched down, you'll see a head poke out on the side, small head, and then go back. So I believe we were looking at a juvenile in that.
Uh-huh. Well, I got
you know,
Marianne and Daniel here. I'm going to put them on the screen, and
okay.
I want to get back to that because I there's something in the news here. Marianne,
there they are.
Marianne Zibel, hello.
Hello.
Hello, Daniel Perez. Daniel, nice to see you again. Can you hear us?
Hi, Daniel.
I can hear you.
Yeah, the Daniel's
hello.
There. Yeah. So, folks, I was telling Larry before you guys came on, Daniel, that I love the idea that you're still doing your newsletter by mail. I think that's great because everyone gets so much goddamn email now. It's like the opposite it was 30 years ago. You just ignore it. So. Anyway, I signed up for your thing today. I'm looking forward to getting it. I need more Bigfoot information. So, you, Daniel, you've had this newsletter, what, about 30 years, right?
A quarter of a century. We're working on our 26th year now.
Well, congratulations.
So we're not going anywhere.
Yeah, that's very cool. And Marianne, you are the founder of the Ozark. Am I going to get this right? Hold on, I got to read it. I'm a reader. I can do that. The Ozark Mountain Bigfoot Conference, right? In Branson, Missouri. And how long has this been going on?
Well, we just had our second annual conference, and we did a campout this year. And this is the first year for the campout, but it went so well that this will be a continuing part of our conference.
Now, I'm going to ask a stupid question. It's the Ozark Mountain Conference, so I'm assuming you're camping out in the Ozark Mountains, right?
Yes, we are in southwest Missouri, and that's part of the Ozark Mountains.
Yeah. Did Larry tell me the one person in your party saw Bigfoot on this hike?
Yes, one of the ladies that was camping out with us did have a visual Saturday night after the storm.
And also Larry said, but basically you all heard it, right? It was walking around the campsite, correct?
Yes, we had at least 10 individuals that heard footsteps. There were some different noises. We had a small storm that rolled through that evening and tore up our cook camp tent.
Uh-huh.
And
Daniel, you're nodding. Were you there?
Yes, I was there.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Go ahead. I'm sorry, Mary. Go ahead.
Oh, no, that's fine. We had several footsteps around different tents, including my husband and I's tent. My husband heard it. We had a lady, couple of campsites down that heard different sounds out around the cook tent. There were footsteps and sounds on the other side of the camp where the other campers were at. So we had a lot of activity in the area that where we were in for the campout.
Mary, have you had an encounter yourself?
Yes, I've seen it. The first time that I went out with the BFRO and that hooked me.
Well, first time it's like gambler's luck in some ways. That's kind of cool. Daniel,
exactly.
Have you seen the entity?
I've never seen a Sasquatch. I've seen footprints.
Uh huh.
On multiple occasions.
Yeah. So there was an article. I put it in my notes. Hold on 1 second here. I want to make sure I get this guy's name right. His name is Robert Bartholomew, and he says that he thinks Bigfoot is a paranormal entity because hardly anyone ever sees families of Bigfoot. And from what I know, I'm no expert like you guys. As far as I know, that's bullshit, isn't it? I mean, hell, Larry, you've seen a family of Bigfoot. I mean, you know?
Yeah, yeah, so, we've got them on video.
What is he talking about? It's like...
It's an easy way for some people to explain the... explain it away to make excuses for different things that happen to them. In the area that Marianne and Daniel were camping in, I think it was just that week, the homeowner had come home from the grocery store, and one of the things they had bought, and when they bought groceries, they had bought two flats of eggs. Now, people aren't familiar with flats. These are square flats. eggs are put in there. They're not wrapped. They're not covered. They're just laying loose in the flat.
Yeah, I've seen them. Yeah.
Okay. So he left it for his son to bring in. His son forgot it. They went out the next morning, and the top flat was gone. Carried off. No eggs broken. No shells. No disturbance at all. Just gone. And this is a very remote area with no people around.
All right, so let me throw this out to the three of you. Just answer, whoever wants to answer. Why is, I want to phrase this correctly. This is obviously an extremely elusive creature. Do you have any idea why it's so elusive? What powers does it have that makes it, I mean, it seems to be basically allergic to people, basically. So how does it matter? How is it, does it happen not to get caught?
Maybe I can answer first.
Please do.
Number one, we're probably dealing with an extremely rare creature, so there's not a whole lot. Every day we could go outside our front door and see a dog or a cat, but not necessarily a Bigfoot.
Yeah.
Number two, they're nocturnal. So when they're operating, in general, they seem to be more nocturnal than diurnal, meaning the daytime.
Uh-huh.
So if they're operating mostly at night, there's going to be few and far between encounters with man. Number three, they have the ability to see at night and at daytime. We generally only have the ability to see during daytime. We could see at night with electronic devices such as thermal imaging equipment and so on and so forth.
Yeah.
Those are the aspects that kind of give Bigfoot in its own backyard the edge. But people do see them.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, and also, to your point, Daniel, and you guys tell me if I'm wrong about this, I've heard that the best estimate for the population of Sasquatch is about 8,000 individuals in the U.S. Is that what you guys have heard? Which is not a lot. I mean,
everyone seems to have different ideas as to the population estimate, and Dr. Jeff Meldrum kind of estimates it based on other known animals, such as the black bear, etc., deer population. And that's a way of doing it.
Is that his estimate?
I'm not exactly certain what Dr. Meldrum's estimate is, but it's actually quite low. And what I wanted to say is the late John Green, one of the pioneer Bigfoot investigators, said when I interviewed him, probably in the 90s, said something to the effect that with the amount of reports being reported in North America, there's probably hundreds of thousands of them. And to me, that seems like a reasonable number. And 100,000, just 100,000, if you stop right there, scattered throughout North America, the United States and Canada, that's not a big number.
No, it isn't. Not at all, no. Especially when you consider the amount of forest, yeah. Uh-huh, go ahead.
Right. Just in the state of Missouri, Mary could correct me if I'm wrong, there's over 1 million deer.
Yeah, right. No, I totally agree with you. 100,000 is not a large number when you consider all the forest in the United States and the places, you know, the Pacific Northwest and the Midwest here. Mary, you're in Missouri too, then, huh?
Correct.
Yeah. Hey, so before you guys came on, I was asking Larry, and I knew the answer to this question, but I wanted the viewers to hear it about how his Bigfoot encounter, because his, like you guys were talking about, his involved in infrared camera. Do you want to talk about yours, Mayor? You want to tell us about how you saw it?
Yeah, I could do that. So we had, I've always been interested in anything that's different. And I've watched everything for years about Bigfoot. And I found out that there were expeditions you could go on with the BFRO. So I signed up for it and we went out, met everybody. And that's where I met Larry and several people that have become extremely close friends now. But it was the first night that we were even out. We didn't know what to expect. We'd been out a while And the gentleman that was leading it told us, oh, it's a full moon. You know, we may not have a whole lot of luck. So it's like, okay. We met up with all the other groups and it was after midnight. We all split into our groups that we'd been in and went different directions. Our group walked down a old logging road. And when we got to a certain area, we stepped off the logging road onto another very primitive road and walked out into the forest. And the gentleman that was leading us said, let's just sit down and listen. And so we did. There was 10 of us and we sat down and we're just sitting around. Nobody's really talking. Everybody's just kind of getting comfortable, sitting back. And some of the gentlemen off to my left started discussing how many were in our group. And the leader said, there's 10 of us, and they're counting, and they're like, well, who is this sitting over here by this bush? And there was a younger girl with us. She was in her early teens, and they thought it was her, and her father spoke up and said, no, she's over here. And so this discussion went on, and they kept counting, and there's 11 of us. And so at that point, they jump up, and when they do, this creature rolls over a berm and is gone. Well, at that point, I didn't see that part. That was just some of the gentlemen that were talking. So at that point, everybody's standing up, facing the direction, and there's a discussion going on. And I'm standing there, my husband's to my left, and this little girl is to my right. And we could hear this slapping noise. And this little girl's looking at me, and I acknowledged that I heard it. And I looked at my husband, and, you know, we're all kind of big eyed at this point. And so I turned around, took a couple of steps and was standing there looking. And I'm not good at judging distance. I could tell you 25 yards. It might have been, it might not have been, but it was a ways away from us. But it was this very large, upright figure that had stepped out from the tree. And I mean, it had no problem letting me see it. It wanted us to look at it.
And well, it sounds like, if you don't mind my asking here, it sounds like when this whole thing started, it had basically clandestinely joined your group, is what the way it sounds. Like,
well, we were wondering if maybe it was a young one that had either snuck up and sat down, or when we walked in, it just didn't move when we sat down.
Uh-huh. It was not, so, I assume, you're saying you did not notice it right away because it was not overly large. Is that what you're saying?
Correct.
Yeah. Okay. So I'm sorry to interrupt you there. So
you
saw this creature at about 25 yards, whatever your guess. Yeah.
Yeah, roughly. And it would step out from one side of the tree. I mean, completely step out, not just like peekaboo out and look at you. It was completely would step out, and then it would go and completely step out on the other side of the tree. And we called the gentleman over that was leading the group, showing him. And in the time that we're showing him, there was another one to the right of that creature. So it would have been my left. There was another one. You could hear it moving around. And at that point, the gentleman that was leading the group decided it would probably be a good idea for us to come on out of the woods, which I begrudgingly did because I wanted to stay and see what it was. But so as we're walking out, you could hear it following us out. We were being followed out. So we got onto the road and we're walking back to the other groups. And one of the groups, there was someone that was standing in the road, thirming us as we were walking up the road. And they hollered at us and said, "You, who's standing in the road down there? You guys left somebody." And we said, no, we didn't. We're all right here.
So now, and they said, now somebody not in your group thinks that's part of your group. Okay. All right. That's interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. This guy's standing right beside me with the thermal looking down the road.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah. So it was standing in the road watching us leave. And so we went back the next day and my husband found a footprint in a mud hole that was full of water. So, I mean, you really couldn't cast it. And then when we went back to the area where we had been sitting, I was standing on the berm looking around, and here's this huge area that's completely matted down. No saplings, nothing. I think we had walked into an area where they bed down.
Uh-huh.
And we didn't know it. You know, it was just a happenstance. We happened into an area, and in the daylight, you could tell this is an area where a large group of something beds down, because the whole area was matted down. Now, if you turned around and looked in the other direction off the berm, there's saplings everywhere. And there was a water source not far from there, and you couldn't see it from the road. It was far enough off. They could have laid there during the day and nobody would have ever seen them from the road.
So
that was my first experience. And after that, I've been hooked.
Well, gee, that's a pretty incredible experience. Seriously. I mean, that's the thing. One of the things that intrigues me about what you just said is that it appears that these Bigfoot you saw were not particularly shy, but my impression is, could you guys jump in here? I'm under the impression that's unusual, right? Generally, they seem to be pretty shy. Is that true?
Typically.
Yeah.
I might add to her story. When the group got back, when Marianne and the rest of the group got back, there was a gentleman. I was in my truck sitting there in the road, and the gentleman was standing beside me with the thermal, and he's talking about this. He left somebody down there in the road. He's standing up in the middle of the road. And they counted, everybody was accounted for. So in just a minute or two, he scanned that area again. Well, it was gone. One of the things that we do typically in a sighting situation, we had one gentleman who was about 6'1", 6'2". We had him walk back down. We're watching him in the thermal, and he gets to the spot where that thing was standing, which happens to be the end of the logging road where they came out into the gravel road. This gentleman was 6'2", 6'1", 6'2", and based on the size comparison, whatever was standing in the road had to be over 7 foot tall.
It's amazing. All right, so I'm going to throw out this is one of the obvious questions the public always asks. How come no one's ever found a body?
I think that they are, when they die, they're in their typical habitat is in low areas, heavy humid. And I'm just going to throw my supposition out. I think they bury their dead, maybe just slightly, but I think that the body deteriorates quickly, even bones in certain locations will deteriorate.
Hell, Larry, rather rapidly. Elephants bury their dead. And this is obviously a very intelligent creature. As a matter of fact, I'm starting to think that the intelligence of this creature has been, even for people who think it's smart, has been underestimated. I'm starting to think that. Daniel, you were going to say something?
I'll let Larry complete his statement.
There's a large number of sightings that occur around cemeteries. For whatever reason, I've got no idea, but you know, they like to mimic us, and maybe over the years they've watched humans bury their dead and they've adopted that. I don't know. Those are some things that we've got to find out. Daniel may have more insight.
Well, the idea of Bigfoot burying their dead, I don't really see it as a stretch. I could see that could really happen. But no one has found the remains of a dead body intact here in North America.
Yeah.
There's a report from Bishop, California. I forget the name of the individual, but it's featured in Alan Berry and B. Ann Slate's Bigfoot book from the 70s, in which a camping group, I guess they were Boy Scouts or Scouts up in the Minaret Mountains, had found what he considered like something of a bowl, like a skull cap. And he brought it home, and he was a medical doctor. And he said that it seemed to have, if I'm saying it correctly, this neutral ridge on the top, similar to a gorilla. And I interviewed him many, many years ago, and he said it was on the mantelpiece for quite a while, but he never took any real interest in it, and he never took any pictures, and eventually I guess he shipped it off to UCLA and From there, Matt Moneymaker from the BFRO gets involved. I tried to track down the piece, but could never find it. But I did talk to him, and it's a real story, and I don't have any reason to not believe him. So that could have been a possible remain. But there's another story from, he's now deceased. He was 17 at the time in 1941, and he was an immigrant to the country of Canada, and this happened in Manitoba. And they were out moose hunting, and the way I understand it, Paul Shibaga is the name of the guy. They didn't have any hunting licenses because I guess they were super poor, and they were just trying to get a moose for food. And he got separated from his hunting party, and he thought he saw one of these things in the bush, a moose, and he shot it at the back end of it. And then it took off, and there was a blood trail, and he followed the blood trail, and he eventually found the moose that was dead, lying dead in the brush. But when he got up to it, he thought, he was 17 at the time, and he thought to himself, holy buckets. And he did not know what he was looking at, but he said it looked something like a gorilla, but like built like a man. And so he didn't have a camera. He didn't really tell anyone about it till much later. But that's his story. An investigator in Manitoba who lived by him tracked him down, did a videotape of what he said happened. And when I was in Nebraska in 2018, he brought that videotape with him. And we were able to review the videotape he did of Paul Shibaga. And I wanted to see with my own eyes whether this guy was credible or not. And he's now deceased, but I found him to be extremely credible that such an event really took place. It could have ended back in 1941, but he didn't know what he had shot. So he thought the best strategy was just to keep your mouth shut, especially knowing the fact that he was illegally hunting in that place.
Well, you bring up a good point here, and that is, even up until recently, there's been no place for anybody really to credibly report this stuff. If you report it to the law enforcement, usually they laugh. I saw a UFO about 10 years ago, and I reported it to law enforcement, and yeah, they laughed at me. And it was huge.
Speaking of which, they just published a very... maybe slightly off topic, the situation in Pascagoula, Mississippi in 1973, Hickson and Parker.
Yeah, I'm familiar with that.
So when after this incident happened, Charles Hickson made the decision to call law enforcement, and he told them right away, he said, I want to tell you a story, but you're not going to laugh at me. And law enforcement on the other end of the phone said, no, we're not going to laugh at you. Tell us what happened. And he goes, I got picked up by a UFO. And the first thing they did was laugh.
Yeah, that's right. I know. They'll say they won't laugh. That's right. But until the BFRO came along, there's really, you know, and the corresponding organization to that is MUFON. There's nowhere really to publicly even tell anybody, you know.
Yeah.
Right.
So, and that's actually a big problem here. I don't have to tell you guys, this has been going on for well over 100 years. And, you know, you're 17 years old, you just shot a Bigfoot. Who are you going to tell? I mean, so, you know, other than your dad.
especially at that time in 1941, the concept of Sasquatch and Bigfoot wasn't really in... used at all.
Right.
It didn't come until later.
Right.
Those terms. And so he had this young 17-year-old teenager had no idea what he had shot and killed. For all he knew, it could have been just a hairy man, but it was an accident because he was moose hunting.
Yeah.
And he made a decision, I'm just not going to tell anyone. And he didn't tell anyone until much later.
Yeah. It's amazing. All right.
Yeah, Jim,
yes.
I think it should be noted, and we're talking about, you know, people don't see them or they don't report them. We're 2023, and other than maybe in the deer season in some areas, people don't go in the woods anymore. And we have more forested area in the United States now than we have had in 200 years.
Thank you for bringing that up. That's very, very true. I have another statistic here. Only 4% of the landmass of the continental U.S. is actually inhabited by people. Right. 94% of it isn't. Anyway, go ahead. You're absolutely right.
Right. And so nobody goes out to the woods anymore, even a woodlot. You know, we're all the kids are now tied to their little phones and tablets, and it's been going that way for 40, 50 years. We don't have to hunt for our food anymore. We go down to the supermarket. So nobody goes into the woods. Nobody looks for that stuff. You know, there's some places over by where Marianne lives that, you know, you'll have a family will call you and say, yeah, we see them all the time. We hear them. They're there. We know they're there. And the people that live, you know, 200 yards down the road, backed up against the same patch of woods, will say, no, we've never seen anything. But they get up in the morning, they walk out to their car, go to work, they come home, walk into the house, turn the TV on, they don't leave till the next morning. They, you know, there could be 100 of them around their house all the time, and they wouldn't know it. So that's kind of the time we live in.
Yeah, Marianne, and that brings up a good point too, Larry. I have heard that there are places, and of course this is what Larry's alluding to, where people say they see Bigfoot regularly, you know, that it's a regular, almost a daily occurrence. Is that going on where you live?
Oh, I'm sure it is. A lot of these people aren't going to say anything because they've been laughed at, you know, by their family, their friends. But there's just too much that goes on in this area. And the longer that you're in it, the more you find out that's going on. And, you know, you get reports out of the same basic areas, you know, and these people say, yeah, you know, we see them crossing our land, or, you know, they're always here in the fall. Well, maybe they're there in the fall because they're getting the apple trees or the pear trees or, you know, whatever it is that they're doing, but they're always there at a certain time.
Shall I assume here that all three of you don't buy this thing about Bigfoot being a paranormal entity? This is right. No, this is right. It's a real animal or whatever, a creature. It's a real creature. Yeah. And the other thing I've heard recently too, I'm hoping one of you can elaborate on this. For the longest time, when people tried to pick up DNA that they thought was Bigfoot, it came back negative. But now, supposedly this summer, for the first time now, we are getting DNA that is marked as unknown primate. In other words, it seems to be legit. Have you guys heard this or about this? Or?
Well, the unknown primate has just been around for a number of years. As long as I've been involved in this, 15 years, I know there was DNA submitted, and it always comes back unknown primate. So until science recognizes it, there's nothing to compare it with, so they have nothing to say except, well, it appears to be primate, but we don't know.
Yeah, but they don't know what it is. And like you said, they can't make a comparison because we don't have an actual Bigfoot sample. We don't. So, yeah. So, any predictions?
Daniel, has this been going on longer than 15 years? I mean, the DNA is a recent thing, but hair samples and DNA samples.
Mary? I'm sorry. Go ahead, Daniel.
Daniel?
If we go back to a publication, it's no longer being published, but I think it was called Frontiers of Science, I think was the name of the publication, and it came out in the early 80s. And the late Eric Beckshord, who was a Bigfooter, had published an article in there, and he had collected blood samples from the Lummi Indian Reservation in Washington State from the late 1970s. I want to say around 1977. And he had someone analyze it. I think it was Dr. Sterin or something like that. And the blood came back as definitely not a person, unknown. And what had transpired is the homeowner said that a Bigfoot had busted the glass window on the house and that blood was left there. And Eric Bechtrod followed up and collected some of this blood. So that may be one of the few cases from the 70s, the earliest that I know of, where blood was actually collected. That's not my field in general, science and medicine and stuff of that nature. But it seems like DNA or eDNA or blood samples that I just think they need a central repository. So if they come back unknown, that someone with better technology might say, well, let's test it again. And
yeah.
Let's see what we can come up with.
Now, forgive me, this guy's name has just eluded me, but what's the name of the professor? Is it Meldrum?
Meldrum.
Yeah, Meldrum, no. Right.
Meldrum.
Yeah, he has pretty much become kind of the go-to guy when it comes to the biological aspect of this stuff, right?
In a way,
yeah.
In a way, he's focused largely on the anatomy of Sasquatch, in particular the feet,
uh-huh.
And what it's telling us as to whether it's we're looking at a real biological animal or whether we're just looking at someone who's faking feet out in the woods.
Right, Mary,
that seems to be his area of expertise.
Mary, were you going to say something?
Oh, I was just what Daniel has said, that Meldrum is, you know, he's about the feet and the casts.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, whether they're fake or real.
So is anybody stepping up here about the DNA? Is there any scientist who's kind of become the go-to person for the DNA?
I'm not sure that there's any specific scientist. Marianne works with a couple of gentlemen down there in her area, and we're roughly talking the Branson, Missouri area, so everybody kind of knows where Branson is. But these two gentlemen are working on a couple of different properties where the owners has invited them because of the activity, and Marianne can talk about Randy and Shane a little bit and what they're trying to do in their areas.
Mary?
Yeah, Randy and Shane, they have a piece of property they call the 400, and they also have a documentary called Into the 400. And this property, they believe that there is a family unit on this property. And Shane has acquired multiple sets of tracks from the juveniles. They have seen the juveniles. They've seen the big male. And, you know, they are establishing some patterns out there. And, you know, after these juveniles get to a certain age, then they're gone. Now, where they go, we don't know. You know, this is some of the stuff that they're trying to figure out, prove.
You don't think they enter another dimension? I'm sorry.
No.
I'm a joker. No, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I've actually, this documentary has been released, right? Because I've heard of this.
Into the 400 has, yes.
And these guys have been tracking this family for like 3, 4, 5 years, right?
At least.
Yeah.
At least, yeah. And now they have another film crew with them that is documenting what they're doing out there also. And they have also come along and documented the Ozark Mountain Bigfoot Conference. They were also with us when we did our camp out. So they've been involved in quite a bit of this and seen things and experienced things too.
That's very cool. All right, I got to ask Daniel about one thing here. Daniel, Larry told me, and I got the impression reading your one-page website, that you're kind of an expert on the Patterson-Gilman film, right?
Yes.
All right, so let me run something by you. I've been involved, I'm 68 years old. I've been involved in television and film my entire life. I remember, so that film was from what, 1967? Is that right?
October 20th of 67.
Right, 67. I remember the first time I saw it, Well, in 67, I was 12. But even going back to my middle age, I'm watching this film, and I'm thinking, that looks so goddamn fake. But then I'm listening to all these scientists tell me that, no, humans couldn't walk that way even in a suit, you know? So what's your take on all this? Is the film... I mean, my impression is people are coming more and more to the realization, or the opinion is going that the film is real, you know?
Well, myself having been a student of the film for multiple decades, my own opinion, which is not reflective of others, is that what you're seeing in that approximately 1 minute piece of film shot by the late Roger Patterson is a real, living, biological Bigfoot in the flesh and blood.
Yeah.
Not a man in a costume.
Right.
And I might add that around 2004, an author by the name of Greg Long wrote a book called The Making of Bigfoot, in which he claimed that he found the man that was in the suit that was part of the film.
Yeah, I understand that. Yeah, right.
And his name was Bob Hieronymus. And that I want to say around 2008 or thereabouts, the National Geographic or another film entity got with Bob Hieronymus and the other fellow who supplied the suit, Philip Morris, who's now deceased. They got together and they made their cameo, so to speak, of Bob Hieronymus being in the suit, walking in the same area. And it was so bad that National Geographic never did anything with it.
Huh.
That it was so obvious that it was a man in a suit.
Right.
When you have a man in a suit.
Well, the other thing is...
One of the best things I've ever heard, he's on a site called the Bigfoot Forums, and I think he goes by the name of BitPo or something like that. But he said something that still to this day resonates with me. He said, yes, the Patterson-Gimlin film looks like a man in a suit until you really see a man in a suit.
Well, the other thing about that whole thing is, too, is you want is, what an easy way to make some money. Claim that you put Bigfoot in a guy in a suit, you know? I mean, shit. And of course, I don't have to tell you guys this. That's the whole problem with going through all the evidence involved in all these matters, is that there's always people on the grift, you know? I mean, I've changed my mind because my first reaction, even as a kid and middle age, was that that film was fake. But the more I think about it, and also the more I listen to all these biologists and scientists say, no, humans don't walk that way. And there's plenty of people who have demonstrated on film, like you said, that's not a human walking. That it's, at this point, I've come around to the fact that I think it's real, too. But
well, just the fact, if you just take the subject in the film and drop away everything, there's just too many things happening in that film that would strongly suggest what you're looking at is an unknown primate and not a man in a costume. The arms are slightly longer than a normal man's arm. The way it walks is walking atypical of modern man, in which the knees are bending and there's almost a right angle between the upper leg and the lower leg.
Right.
And another aspect of that film is after the film happened and two entities came in to investigate, Bob Titmuss, the late Bob Titmuss, and Lyle Laverty, who was part of the United States Forest Service, and his occupation was timber management to see which trees were going to be chopped down. But he was able to find that film site 3 days after the occurrence. And so Lyle Laverty, I interviewed him twice when I was working on a booklet, and then in 2017, which was like 25 years after the fact, or some 50 years after the fact. And at the time, he was about 170 pounds. And so him and a couple of other people that were part of the timber management assistant, that group was on the film site Monday, October 23rd. And so I asked them the question about, well, how did your tracks think comparable to what was on the sandbar, the footprints that were left there that they discovered And he kind of really backed up and he says, oh my goodness. He says, my tracks weren't even coming anywhere near the depth of the tracks that were seen by the Bigfoot that was left the trackway in the sandbar after the subject left. And then I might add that on November 5th of 1967, Jim McLaren, who was involved in Bigfoot at the time, who was a student at Humboldt State College, got up to the film site with Richard Henry, who's from Willow Creek, California, who's now deceased. But they got up there, and I interviewed Richard Henry before he passed away, and he said something to the effect, I've got it all on tape, but he said something to the effect that I was on my hands and knees looking at these tracks in the ground, trying to figure out how they were faked, and I could think of no way that they could have been faked. And he told me, again, I asked him, how much did you weigh at the time, and did you walk adjacent to the tracks? And he says, yeah, we did that. And again, his comment was, my tracks weren't coming anywhere near the tracks that he was looking at in terms of depth. So whatever had walked and is responsible for Roger Patterson's film, whether it's a man in a costume or whether it's a Bigfoot, was extremely heavy because some of the tracks were depressed into that sandbar almost 3/4 of an inch. And so between Lyle Laverty, who's still living, Bob Titness, who passed away, a Bigfoot investigator from Canada, and Richard Henry from Willow Creek, California, they testified, because they actually saw the tracks, that the tracks were extremely deep in the ground. And so you just don't do that when you're faking tracks, because again, a normal man, say, even if you give him 250 pounds, he's not going to be making deep tracks on that sandbar that were witnessed by these three individuals who testified that the tracks were extremely deeply sunk in the ground.
So, you know, so that's, go ahead. I'll finish.
That's
sorry.
Just one aspect that the skeptics conveniently avoid in a detailed discussion about the PG film as to, you know, they're saying it's fake, but when it comes to the depth of the tracks, it's just like they're nowhere to be found in terms of a discussion point.
Uh-huh. Now, people have, I can't remember when this happened, as the 1980s or 1990s, where there was some guy who came forward who said, and the thing is, this is there's a parallel in the UFO community to this too, where this guy said that he faked all the tracks, you know, with a stupid little Bigfoot,
oh,
you know.
Ray Wallace.
Yeah. Now the thing, okay, but here's my question: why would it's not so much why would somebody do that, but why does that's so stupid? Why does the press buy it? And do you guys think? I'm really curious here. Do you guys think the government has any interest in either discounting or faking this at all? Because that's what I deal with Larry. Larry knows me. But still, why would you push that?
I don't think that the government doesn't have any interest in faking it. Okay.
All right.
You know, there's some creative people out there that wouldn't want to try to fake something all the time.
Oh, I'm sure a few people have tried this. Yeah.
And there's in the Bigfoot community, Sasquatch community, we know of some probably pretty legitimate anecdotes where a number of Bigfoot bodies, or maybe just one or two, have been located, but there's military has come in and taken them away and strictly admonished everybody involved that you will never speak of this.
Yeah, I've heard these stories too. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But if it's just a regular, you know, ordinary creature, why would they do that? Well, I mean, I can answer my own question. I mean, the answer that I've heard is that if Bigfoot was deemed legitimate and, like, quote-unquote official, it would basically kill all logging in the United States because it would become a protected species and you wouldn't be able to cut down a tree anywhere. Is that what you guys have heard?
That's one of the things that is a common discussion. We don't know.
Is that legit, though, Lair? Is that is that really true?
I would think if you admitted, if the government admitted that there was an animal out there that was very rare, that they would get endangered species status immediately. And since they live in the woods, you're talking a real serious logging industry concern.
Yeah.
I mean, when you do that with an owl, look at what happened when they found an owl.
Yeah, that was a lot. It was an owl. No offense, but we, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mary, you have anything to add here at all?
Well, Jim, if you'll come down, Larry and I can take you out and prove it to you.
Yeah.
Oh, well, I mean, I would like to, you to think that, that I am leaning on the side of that, that it's real, for sure. I am. I have friends, you know, who endlessly make fun of me, especially about the Bigfoot thing. You know, the, unfortunately, the UFO thing's basically been proven now, so, you know, I look fantastic. But now we're on to Bigfoot, and it's like, you know, it's like...
Yeah, you always look fantastic.
Oh, God. Anyway, oh, I know. I know.
Yeah, I want to give a shout out to Marianne. Marianne's conference this year was extremely informative. Daniel was there, gave a presentation. A gentleman by the name of John Moreland was there, and he gave a presentation that had, he basically was proving the fact that this is a non-primate humanoid species. And I think I sent you a link to some of his papers, but he makes a very strong case for that. But anyway, Marianne did a great job. She had wonderful speakers that was very informative and gave a lot of really good information. Anybody that would like to learn about them, I would suggest contacting her for next year's conference. And it's a great way to learn. When you bring all of these experts like Daniel and John and the gentleman from the 400 into a place, if you have any interest in this at all, you're going to learn so much in a short period of time. It's just amazing how much you can learn from these people.
So, Marianne, does your organization have a website? I don't have the URL if you do.
We currently do not have a website. I have a gentleman that's working on that for us going forward. What we have is a Facebook page, and it's Ozark Mountain Bigfoot Conference. I can also, Larry's shirt. I can also tell you that John Morley's papers are going to be published on Ozark Mountain Sasquatch, their page. Shane and Randy's page that they have for what they're doing on the 400. So Dr. Morley has become a member of their team now, and all his papers are going to be published on Ozark Mountain Sasquatch. So you'll be able to go in there and read all these papers that he has published on, you know, Bigfoot slash Sasquatch.
So, Mary, does your organization, other than the annual conference, do you do like monthly expeditions, or what do you do otherwise?
Not currently. I would like to do more. I am a BFRO member, and I am going to be leading the expeditions in Missouri with Larry. He's going to be the co-host on these, and we're going to start out doing those twice a year. I'm also going to have the expedition next year, and I would like to add more if there's the interest of people wanting to go out and learn, because this is what we're all about. We want to teach people. We want to share the research and not do like they've done in the past and you hoard all of it and you won't share anything, because how can we learn and prove this is a real entity out there if we're not sharing our research?
Yes. Well, and it's very unscientific not to share. It just is.
Exactly. And it's like there's 110 rabbit holes we can go down with this of what if, what if, what if. No, let's prove it's real. Then we can figure out what its abilities
are. And I'd like to think this is a master of the obvious stupid, but nobody owns Bigfoot, you know?
No.
Right.
No.
That's the thing. Well, folks, I want to thank you for joining us this evening. This has been a fascinating discussion. So, Daniel, we'll put a link on our blog to your one-page website to sign up for your newsletter. And Mary, Mary, could you send me the link to your Facebook page?
Sure.
Yeah, please do that. And Larry, okay, you just send me a picture so I can look at it all the time, see how beautiful a man you are.
Thank you. I always feel better after talking to you, Jim. It just makes me feel great.
Yeah. Well, I know. I like making you feel good. So, hey, by the way,
Bigfoot Times, absolutely. Look up BigfootTimes.net. And
22 bucks a year. I signed up. We're not talking about a lot of money. Oh, by the way, is it bi-monthly? What is it, Daniel?
No, it comes out monthly.
Monthly.
So every month you'll get a newsletter.
Excellent. That's fantastic.
So it's the greatest bang for your buck.
Yeah.
But before we go, I'd like to give a real big shout out for Mary Ann and her conference there. I thought it was brilliant because it's a concept where you're having a conference, and then when you're not at the conference, you're at a campsite. And so that's really a novel concept. And it was, if we didn't camp and we were all parked at hotels, this sighting by Brandy Butcher on the wee hours of September 17th, that Sunday, never would have happened.
Right.
Uh-huh.
That's correct.
I followed up on that immediately. And so, and Mary Ann didn't even charge for the sighting. So I thought, you know, it was wonderful that all of these things transpired. And like I said, nothing would have happened had we not had a camp out. And so, this concept of her meet, those are a Bigfoot Mountain conference. I think it's great. And, you know, I wish her much success on the third annual, which would be next year.
Yeah, and I'm coming to that. So you guys keep trying. Let me know what's going on. So I'm going to come too. I was going to come with Larry to another Gatlinburg conference, but I just ended up unemployed. So it did not work out well. So, yeah.
Yeah, well, we did have several bear sightings, but...
Yes.
Yeah, well, you're talking about bears, the animals, right?
Yeah. Yes, Jim. Yes. That was
I'm terrible. I'm awful. Somebody shoot me.
I warned them.
Yeah. Well, folks, thank you very much. Thank you. We'll do this again, I hope.
Thank you.
Yeah. Okay, you guys, all right. So the way this works here, I'm going to run the bumper music, and when I do that, you'll all be gone, okay? All right.
All right.
Thanks.
All right.
Take care.
Take care.
All right. That was kind of fascinating. Not kind of fascinating. That was very fascinating. I hope you guys are interested in this because I'm totally interested in this. I'm totally in the tank for this stuff. That was Marianne Zeibel. She's the founder of the Ozark Mountain. Oh, I'm going to read it again. I'm absolutely certain I get it right. It's the Ozark Mountain Bigfoot Conference in Branson, Missouri. And my friend Larry Newman, who's a Bigfoot investigator, and Daniel Perez, who's the editor of the Bigfoot Times. And that's at BigfootTimes.net. And like we were saying, it's $22. It's a monthly newsletter, and you actually get it through the snail mail. It's not emailed to you. And God knows, that's something I just put on the coffee table and just grab and read. I mean, I'm so tired of reading shit on a screen. It's unbelievable. All right, so I got a couple more things here before we go. Oh, by the way, and I'm so terrible. I forgot to mention, if you wanted to call in during that, you could have. You know, that's why I'm keeping this. We kept this on the screen here. That's the reason. So you can call jimandnight.com/call. If you want to call now, that's fine. You know, I'm gonna yak here for a few more minutes. So if you want to call up, that's fantastic. So what I got here is I thought, you know, we were talking about the UFO stuff. And I was mentioning about the fact, so, you know, I'm not going to repeat the story because I've already told it on the air about the fact that about 10 years ago, I saw a giant giant flying triangle outside of Hastings, Minnesota, about 50 miles south of the center of Minneapolis. I was saying during that discussion, I went to the police and told them about it, and they laughed at me. They laughed and laughed and laughed. You know, okay, fine, I understand. Yeah, I was just a crazy jackass driving around the prairie. So I thought I'd end with a couple of UFO things here because I thought they were kind of maybe pertinent. And so I'm going to read this off of the Mysterious Universe website. They published this. Nick Pope, who once ran the UFO desk for the UK's Ministry of Defense and is considered an authority on unidentified anomalies, that would be UFOs, says the most recent revelations from former U.S. officer and intelligence official David Grush that he has seen evidence of downed alien spacecraft being reverse engineered at secret U.S. military sites, which was followed by more revelations from other former members of the university, the U.S. military, is a sure sign that a power struggle is going on behind the scenes at the Pentagon. I've talked about this, that this has actually been going on for quite a while. There's a huge power struggle between the people who think this information should be released and the people who think it shouldn't. And also, both sides has more than one reason to think that. Anyway, they go on here. This series claims and counterclaims is a couple of possible explanations, Nick says. And this is the reason I'm reading this, because his two explanations are quite fascinating. One is that, quote, it's all true, and there's a faction that wants to get the story out, while others are pushing back. Or, as he says, it's possible that a faction within the U.S. Defense Department believes it's true, but lacks evidence, so they're issuing these reports because they're trying to smoke out other parts of the government that even they can't access just to get information. One or the other. And that second one really fascinated me, because I never thought of that before. We have a caller. I'm going to put the caller on the screen here. It's Cooper. Hello, Cooper. How you doing?
Hello, Jim at Night. How are you?
I'm good. So if I remember right, you're an extraterrestrial, right?
That's correct.
And what do you think about what Nick Pope said?
Well, I had a couple of questions, if you have a minute.
Yeah, of course I do.
So I had heard, I don't know if you had heard this, I was hoping you might ask them, that years ago when Andy Williams was doing his show in Branson, he used to do one late at night, later than anybody else in Branson would do it. And they said that sometimes if you looked in the audience, it was 50% Bigfoot. And I wonder, could you get any of those guys back on the phone and ask them about the Andy Williams Bigfoot?
Well, they're gone now. Unfortunately, no, I can't put them back on the screen. They've all left, so I can't ask them about that. What did you think of that Bigfoot discussion, Cooper?
Oh, well, I was absolutely convinced there's no such thing as a Bigfoot or a Sasquatch. But after that 1 hour, I know it to be a fact now.
I sense cynicism.
No, I mean, if you join up with that group, they take you out on a walk. There's Bigfoots everywhere.
Yeah, well, yeah.
Is it true that there's actually at one of the older theaters in Branson, is there a Bigfoot jamboree? If
I don't know. I don't know.
I understand it's not cheap, but wouldn't that be an easier way to see the Bigfoot?
We pay admission.
Yeah.
And you didn't mention the fact that when Andy Williams was doing his show, that one of the Osmond brothers was also Bigfoot, too. I don't think you mentioned that.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, I can't remember what his name was, Bernie or something like that. Yeah.
Yeah. At least in the Ozark area, do you know who does the circumcisions on the Bigfoot?
No. I didn't know they were circumcised. Now you gave me a great question to ask next time. I have to ask that, whether they're circumcised or not.
Yeah. I think we're going to have to bring a couple of Bigfoots up to our planet and take a look at them.
Yeah, I think you are. You know, there's that theory, you know, that they've been dropped off by UFOs. So, you know, there's that. Yeah.
And, you know, most these guys are not part of this group. Most experts agree that Sasquatch can change planes.
Well, yeah, you understand. I kind of mentioned that. You know, I did ask about that a little bit.
Yeah, they sort of shot that down. Because,
yeah, they did.
They're much more grounded, obviously.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. They're not quite as crazy.
But I'd really like, if you could follow up on that Andy Williams thing, I'd like to know.
Oh, I would. Did they do a Christmas album, too? Did they do that?
No, they were in the audience. Andy was doing the show.
Yeah, The Days of Wine and Roses.
You know, toward the end of his career, he wasn't drawing as many people.
Yeah.
And so the Bigfoot, you know, they love songs about rivers and the moon and stuff like that.
You know, nobody, you know, there's five people listening to this who actually got what you just said.
Not with your demographic.
Okay.
As a matter of fact, tonight I was looking at the attendance meter. So you had seven people watching tonight, and I think four of them were playing were playing a soundtrack from Andy Williams, Born Free.
Probably. That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, listen, keep these quality programs coming, will you?
Thanks, Cooper. Yeah, have a nice trip back to wherever you were. Where did you come from? I don't know.
All right, you're welcome.
All right, see you later.
Bye.
That's Cooper, and he never says what planet he's from. He doesn't, but he calls it in. I think that's the second time he's called in. All right, folks. Well, so I was making a point there about what Nick Pope was saying, but I found that second thing about the fact that, you know, it's obvious there's a lot of people who think it's true, and they want to get the story out, and they're getting pushback. But the fact that there might be people who don't know if it's true and are just floating all these ideas to find out if it is, I never thought of that. That's an interesting take on the whole thing. So it's a weekend. We don't do a Friday show here. I'll be back on Monday. Same bat time, same bat channel. And I'm going to go see my mother on Saturday. She's 99. You know, I talk about her. You know, I figured out, you know, I think we're just going to have her call up. You know, we can still do old time phone interviews here. I mean, she won't be on the screen, but I think that's probably the best way to do it because that's simple for her. And I want to get her on the show. She was on my radio show several times. And of course, she called in. You know, say it was simple. So I think maybe we do the same thing again. I want to thank you for watching. Really appreciate it. Yeah, no. Cooper did allude to something here. We have way, way more people that watch on demand than watch this live. I hope we can start to change that at some point. But I do. Either way, I appreciate you watching very much. I mean, this is the end of our eighth week. I think this is our 26th or 27th show. So we haven't been doing this too long. So, and all the numbers, you know, actually are pretty good considering how long we've been on. So thank you. Thanks to Marianne Zeibel. Thanks to Daniel Perez. And thanks especially to my friend Larry Newman. Appreciate them coming on tonight. I thought it was a fascinating discussion regardless of what Cooper thinks. And I'm line up guests for next week, but don't know any, but can't confirm anything in that yet. So you guys have a nice weekend. And we'll see you on Monday. Here's the end card.